Helen Gillet spent most of her young life studying classical cello. But one day, she fell for an entirely different kind of music.
I felt like a baby again after 10 years of studying the cello pretty intensely. I felt like a child again in music. And then I was infected with that improv bug. And so that was my gateway into jazz.
Gillet now plays jazz cello, joining a rarefied coterie of musicians who bring a European sensibility to the music. Her repertoire embraces avant-garde instrumentals and thoroughly modern renditions of vintage French love songs. There's humor in her music and the occasional flaw.
I like mistakes. I'm an improviser, so I work with the mistakes.
Helen Gillet, the master of the unexpected, after the break. Have you hugged your cello today? Helen Gillet hugged hers before she learned to play. They've since traveled much of the world together, and nearly every performance repeats the sounding joy of her childhood introduction. Gillet's first cello lesson was in Singapore, where she and her family lived for a time. But the Gillets have led a peripatetic life. While some are American and living in the U.S., others are Belgian and living in Belgium. In 2003, Helen landed right here in New Orleans and stayed. She's a classically trained cellist with a penchant for French romantic songs, Indian ragas, free jazz improvisation, funk music, and the occasional Leonard Cohen cover, or the Velvet Underground. 8 albums after arriving in the city, Gillet's performances are still magical. She can sound like a big band even when she plays alone. But she's only alone when she wants to be. Gillet has collaborated with any number of musicians, including Marianne Faithfull, Cassandra Wilson, the modern jazz bassist James Singleton, and the Mardi Gras Indian Orchestra. Helen Gillet joins us at Marini Recording Studios. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Gwen. That was awesome.
Every time I see you, I always feel as if I'm witnessing some little bit of magic walk by or perform on stage. There's something special about you.
Thank you so much.
That's true. But now you've started something with this playing during the introduction, so I'm going to ask you to finish what you started.
All right.
This is a song called Petite Fille.
Yes.
Yes?
Thank you. c'est vrai, tu t'envoies ta voix sur la forêt, pour toi, petite fille, petite fille, petite fille.
I think I hit some mics at the end, but I feel good about that.
Excellent. As do I.
Okay.
That was fantastic. But I have to say, Helen Gillet, how the devil did you do it? I mean, you're one person, and yet we just heard a flood of sound coming from what?
Coming from, this is called a loop pedal, L-O-O-P, loop. They've been around for a long time. Loops, you know, have been sort of a way to record yourself or record something and loop it so it just plays over and over again. And then you can record a layer on top of that and another layer on top of that. When I'm teaching kids, I'm like, let's make a sandwich. Like, we'll start with the baseline and then we'll put some, you know, a bread and then we'll like put some mayonnaise. I don't like mayonnaise. We'll put some mustard on there. So I'll have like maybe a bass and percussion, like a rhythm track on phrase one and then harmonies on phrase two and then the vocals on phrase three. So I do have some separation throughout the song as well. But I've developed my own style of looping just from doing it for a long time now. I've been doing it over a decade.
Wow. I mean, yeah. It's fascinating because it sounds like a heck of a lot of fun, you know, but also it seems as if, you know, it's sort of a trick of timing. You have to know, you know, the beat that you're going to go with,
mm-hmm.
and make sure that everything fits within that beat, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And so I think there's different approaches to that rhythmic concept with looping. You can actually quantize, it's called, and a lot of looping technology now that's computer-based will use mathematical quantizing where you're like, it's going to be this tempo, and it's going to be in 4-4, and the computer knows it. That's what you're going for, and it'll sort of make up for your human discrepancies.
Do you like that?
I do not, and I don't use that because mm-hmm. I like mistakes. I'm an improviser, so I work with the mistakes. In fact, you know, inevitably, even the most sort of polished of my songs, quote unquote polished, because I tend to keep it pretty loose and free, but even the more polished ones will have like something that's unexpected happen. Maybe a volume is not exactly where I wanted it to be, or I thought it would be, or I missed a little bit of, you know, my thumb slipped a little and the pizzicato of my guitar lick sounds weird or different. Just like being on stage with an improvisational ensemble. You know, you never know what's going to happen, and you have to work with it to create something. And that's my joy in music, is to work with the unpredictable. And then I also have there's an undo button on this loop pedal for anything you just put in. So if I catch it immediately, I can get rid of it too. So little tricks too.
Yeah, I think we all need an undo button, actually.
Oh, yeah.
just to have in your purse, you know, in your back pocket. But what's strange about the cello, I have to say, is that it's been around for a long time now, and most people tend to like to play it straight, right? So at what point did you realize that Johann Sebastian Bach was not going to do it for you?
Yeah, with all respect to Johann.
Exactly.
No, he still remains sort of the king of all cello repertoire. Those Bach suites are so fabulous. But I do have training in classical music, and I took it all the way to a master's degree because I do love classical music, but also it remains the way to educate yourself on the cello that is the most technically, you know, elevated. I mean, you know, to get precise on the instrument, classical training is still where you go. But no, when I was 19 years old, I was playing in the Beloit-Janesville Symphony Orchestra in Wisconsin. I was going to school in Beloit.
Beloit College or university?
Beloit College, which mm-hmm. is on the border of Illinois and Wisconsin. So, and my mother's family is from that northern Illinois area. So anyway, and I was playing in our orchestra, and the cello section, shout out to the Beloit-Janesville cello section, they could tell I was interested in different things, you know? I mean, and they knew of an Indian classical cellist that was living in Madison, Wisconsin.
Mm.
She is unique in the world. Her name is Nancy Lesh. She studies Indian, North Indian music on the cello, but I mean, to the point where she has gotten her cello adapted with a sympathetic string, like a sitar.
Wow.
And she sits cross-legged on the floor. She's been doing this for over 30 years, and she lives in India and is a sought-after Indian classical performer.
Found her in Wisconsin?
And I know it sounds weird, but she was living in Madison at that time. The stars lined up for me, I tell you what, because she was a great teacher and she taught me improvisation through these Indian ragas, which are, I really just cut my teeth on two ragas over 2 years, and I can't claim to be an expert by any stretch of the imagination in Indian music, but it influenced my entire career because it opened up my ears. Took me off the page.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the practice room, you know, doing my scales and etudes and Rachmaninoff sonatas, and which are beautiful.
Yes, they are.
But I was needing something else, and she taught me how to use my ears. And I remember that moment where she sang to me, and I had to find the note, and I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to use my ears.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I really need to hone this skill. And then it opened up. I felt like a baby again after 10 years of studying the cello pretty intensely. I felt like a child again in music. Was infected with that improv bug. And so that was my gateway into jazz.
But the thing is, by the age of 19, you'd already been studying cello for 10 years.
Yes.
You were heading toward classical music as a career. And then you find yourself almost stolen away from your original path by this very seductive avenue, you know, that's opened up. You know, you've become Alice in Wonderland or something, you know. As the door to jazz opened, did you feel the door to classical music closing behind you?
That's such a good question. I love this image of being stolen away, like joining the circus or like running away with it. But I did feel that was happening. And I noticed my teachers, especially my teachers would kind of frown upon the improv, you know, my classical teachers.
Yes.
But I had some cool teachers too, and that was true when I moved to New Orleans. I was studying at Loyola with shout out to Alan Nisbet, the cello professor there. He has helped many, many a cellist and a bass player and really all string players. But meanwhile, I'm deep in the improvising. At night, I was out in clubs playing with James Singleton and
the great bassist, yes, and a founding member of Astral Project, one of the founders of Astral Project.
Mm-hmm. Incredible, incredible teacher James is as well to me. So I sort of straddled both of those worlds, and I decided consciously that orchestral playing was probably not going to be my future.
More about improvisation. You know, every time I hear musicians talk about the importance of improvisation, I always think about Ray Charles for some reason saying, it's gonna do what it's gonna do.
Oh, nice. I like that.
But the thing is, you know, if you are on stage improvising with an ensemble, can you actually hear if someone else in that ensemble is not improvising? And how do you know?
I think at some point you can tell when they stop listening, because if you're improvising, that means you are spontaneously creating in the moment. Part of that creation is taking into consideration what is going on with the sounds that you're hearing around you, with the rhythm, with the texture, the harmony, everything. I mean, you have to listen. So if somebody's kind of coming into the situation with a predetermined idea, like, I'm going to show off my new lick that I've been practicing at home, then they're playing that lick, but everyone else is like kind of somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then it just sounds like two juxtaposed things. And it becomes pretty clear, pretty apparent. When I'm in a situation with somebody or a couple of people that are not listening, I don't have anything to contribute to that. I can't play. I just find myself sort of backing off. You know, maybe they have something to say and they don't want to play with others right now. And they just need to get it out of their system. So I'm going to let them do that for a while, you know?
Well, I mean, it's a very civilized way of looking at things in the sense that, you know, I'm thinking of the Charles Mingus years where he'd simply punch a musician on the bandstand who is not, you know, who's not listening, as you're saying. Are those days over? No punches?
Well, I mean, I'm too worried about breaking my cello. You know, it's a fragile instrument. I don't want to, like, get in a brawl.
Good point.
Especially with a brass player, because that metal versus wood, you know which one's going to win.
You know, in reading some of your past interviews, you've mentioned a cellist, a Dutch cellist by the name of Ernst Reisiger.
I'm so glad you brought him up. He's a big shout out to Ernst Reisiger. He, you know, in the 1980s, he won a lot of bebop awards on the cello. He really is a pioneer for jazz cello in Europe. But the European style has a weird sense of humor with jazz. It's like a lot more avant-garde kind of sort of twisted sense of humor. And I'm half Belgian, so I really like that. I've got that dry sort of European humor in me as well. He's kind of a comedian when he performs as well. He brings the lighthearted nature into improvising. And talk about freeing up the cello. I mean, because it is a sort of a somber, morose instrument sometimes, and he just kind of takes that and throws it on its head.
Reisiger, I mean, he's still performing, though, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah, so Ernst Reisiger's career, so after he won this bebop award in the 80s, he's really one of the most sought-after improvising cellists in the European jazz world. He's done work for Werner Herzog movie soundtracks. He's done work with Sardinian men's choruses from Italy that are beautiful. Like, really, his discography is gorgeous.
And so what Mr. Reisiger can offer is a European sensibility. But, I mean, what in many ways we've been talking about up until this point has been very much head music, very much cerebral music.
Right.
But in New Orleans, there's always that combustive, you know, meeting of the head and the derriere, so to speak.
Oh, oui.
And so you do need to find the funk, you know, not only to survive here and to have a career here, but also I would imagine to feel more integrated.
Yeah. And, you know, that's something my dearly departed mom has taught me is throughout all of our travels, her travels, her gutsy move in marrying a Walloon Belgian man and following him all over the world and raising children all over the world. But she really taught my brother and I how to assimilate and truly be in a culture, be in a new space. I think that that's part of why I enjoy playing a lot of different styles, because I enjoy sort of fitting into where I'm at and seeing what's needed and providing that. And also, I love Prince. And since
Prince, the performer Prince?
Yeah, the music of Prince. I'm one of these super fans, okay? Shout out to all of y'all out there. Since I was 11, I got bit by the Prince bug, and it's been there with me. I just DJ'd a Prince night the other night. I'm just a huge fan, and that's dance music, you know? And I went to the house era in the Chicago dance scene. I was a teenager dancing my butt off. And I came down here and wanted to dance. You know, I remember the first time I played at a festival and had these two, like, beautifully drunk ladies just dancing and yelling and dancing their butts off to my looped cello. And I'm like, wow. I've arrived.
Suppose you have, yes.
I did it. You know, I got the rhythm to the point where it's making people want to dance.
From her self-titled album. Coming up, when Jacques Brel was alive and well and living in Paris, Helen Gillet was in Southeast Asia, steeped in the art of French romantic singing. We'll hear more after the break. Ne me quitte pas. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. The song Sympathique is based on an old French poem and was recorded originally by Pink Martini. This version features our guest, Helen Gillet, on cello and vocals. After describing the melancholy of a broken heart, she says, I don't want to work. I don't want to eat. I only want to forget. And then I smoke.
Déjà, j'ai connu le parfum de l'amour. Un mille roses m'emballerait pas autant. Maintenant, une seule fleur dans mes entours. Je me rends mal.
Gillet is an improvisational cellist who says that half of the time she thinks in English and the other half in French. Her parents met in the late 1960s in Illinois when her American mother was a graduate student at the Chicago Theological Seminary and her Belgian father was a graduate student at the University of Chicago.
I think their first date is pretty cute. They were at a Greek restaurant in Chicago, and my dad, who's very, you know, very much a man's man, he didn't want to ask my mom for help translating the menu, so he was just eavesdropping, and he imitated what he heard. He was also very artistic and musical, my father. But anyway, and the waitress took my mom's order and said, "What would you like, sir?" And he goes, "I will have a doggy bag." And then the waitress was like, "You want anything in that, sir?" And he's like, "A strawberry milkshake."
Now that's the way to impress a girl. Yes.
My mom still married him. And then they decided to go back to Belgium and get married there, raise children there. But then my father got offered a job with a French bank in Singapore. And he's an adventurer, my father. And they made a good team. They made a good team there for a while, you know?
Yeah.
And lucky for my brother and I, because we stayed in Singapore 9 years.
That's a while.
Yeah. My father kept switching jobs there to keep us there. And then we moved back to Belgium. And then my parents did end up splitting up. It couldn't last forever. It was a good combo there for a while.
Exactly.
But the thing is, because you have lived in so many different places during your childhood, I would imagine it might be difficult to think about one household. But normally, you know, when you think about your childhood and your most vivid impression of your household, can you tell us what it sounded like?
We always had a piano in the house. Mm-hmm. Both my father and mom played. My mom was more classically trained on the piano, and she also played the clarinet. Sometimes semi-professionally, my mom played clarinet in some of the Singapore, semi-professional orchestras and things like that.
And so what kind of music were you hearing in the home?
Well, my mother's piano etudes and, you know, and nocturnes. And then my father also had a little baritone brass instrument. And he would sort of, like, I'd have these pool parties with my friends, and my dad would, like, bring his baritone and just sort of, like, play the Pink Panther soundtrack. Like strutting around the poolside, like I'm like very proud of himself, you know? And then there's a lot of French chansons, you know, the French style of singing, the art songs that came out of the 50s and 60s were really big in the house. Jacques Brel, Georges Brassens.
Yes.
You know.
I love Jacques Brel. It's like every time I think about him, I think of, you know, some moody band with a cigarette walking down, you know, rain-soaked cobblestone streets.
That's right. I think my father kind of, he wanted to be him a little.
Yeah.
Like, my dad was him a little bit. My dad had the mustache growing up, and yeah, he was definitely like the French man stereotype.
Je t'offrirai des perles de pluie venues de pays où il ne pleut pas. Je creuserai la terre jusqu'après ma mort pour couvrir ton corps d'or et de lumière. Je ferai un domaine où l'amour sera roi, où l'amour sera loi, où tu seras reine. Ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas.
My dad had a pipe. Like to smoke the pipe, which is Georges Brassens, who I end up covering a lot of his tunes.
Yes, tell us about him.
He was a professor. I believe he taught Latin and French literature, and he was so good at writing prose that his friends who were musicians at the time, the post-World War II era, sort of gypsy jazz was catching on, and like this like style of music was getting real popular in France. And they said, you have to learn to play the guitar and sing some of these, because your lyrics are putting all of us to shame. So he did, and he became really one of the most famous French chanson singers of that 1950s era.
Margoton, la jeune bergère, trouvant dans l'herbe un petit chat qui venait de perdre sa mère, l'adopta. Elle entr'ouvre sa collerette et le couche contre son sein. C'était tout ce qu'elle avait, pauvrette, comme coussin. Le chat, la prenant pour sa mère, se mit à téter tout de go. Ému Margot le laissa faire, brave Margot. Un croquant passant à la ronde, trouvant le tableau peu commun, s'en alla le dire à tout le monde et le lendemain.
He's still revered in France as one of the best songwriters in the French canon of, you know, art songs. He writes these epic stories, and it's very cinematic, and really my father and my whole Gillet side of the family is very artistic and musical. And you know, when I go back there and I play, it's kind of like everybody can sit down at the piano and play something, or pick up a guitar and play something in my Belgian family. So I'm very, very influenced by them as well.
But then you also cleave to Leonard Cohen and the Velvet Underground and Lou Reed, you know.
Yeah, I've been doing some PJ Harvey too.
There you go.
Love her.
Which is really interesting, because that sort of reveals in many ways your penchant for the avant-garde, right? And for the theatricality of music, which is related in many ways still to the European French art music, right? Mm-hmm. Art songs.
Yeah, that's interesting. As a performer, I do gravitate towards good storytellers, and I'm certainly inspired by that drama. And I love creating a bed of music that's, a lot of people say my music would be great in soundtracks. And I think it's because I am so influenced by that style of music that was that 50s and 60s French chansons. The music was supporting this story. It's very operatic, very cinematic.
So who are the great French chansons female singers?
Well, there's Juliette Gréco, Edith Piaf, of course.
Yes.
Barbara. Lucienne Delisle made Mon Amant de Saint-Jean, a song that I've been singing for a long time now. It's about falling in love with an accordion player. She sang that one, and that one just got me. And it is one of the most covered French chansons in the canon. Falling for an accordion player playing musettes along the Seine River, and then getting your heart broken, and always believing his lies, and it's so dramatic, and it's great for a cellist, singing cellist.
Je ne sais pourquoi j'allais danser à Saint-Jean, au musette, mais il m'a suffi d'un seul baiser pour que mon cœur soit prisonnier. Comment ne pas perdre la tête, serré par des bras audacieux, car l'on croit toujours aux doux mots d'amour quand ils sont dits avec les yeux.
Moi qui l'aimais tant, je le trouvais le plus beau de Saint-Jean. Je restais grisé, sans volonté, sous ses baisers.
It's hard to squeeze the truth out of a lying accordion player. That's Mon Amant de Saint-Jean by the French chanteuse Lucienne Delisle and our guest, Helen Gillet.
N'en parlons plus, non, il ne parle plus, c'est du passé. N'en parlons plus.
And a Atchafalaya River alert. Stay with us. Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. Helen Gillet is a jazz cellist and experimental artist, which means that much of her repertoire remains a work in progress. She says her song Steady Love is as yet unfinished, and that's the point.
Steady love.
We're talking with Helen Gillet, a wonderful, wonderful jazz improvisational artist and a cellist. And you're quoted as saying, I love taking, and I'm going to paraphrase here, my cello on a joyride to other places.
My mother always loved that quote. She's like, that was a good one. She's such a literary brain. I'm like, oh, good.
Like you lured the cello into a car and then just sped off with it someplace, you know?
Yeah.
Made it do things that it never thought it could do.
That's right. That's right. Come with me. In fact, right now my cello has my handprints on it from where I've been drumming on it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to remove them because I like the pattern. So if I do bring it to a luthier that's going to polish that off, I'm going to have to like have an artist like paint it or something so I can capture it, because it comes from like years of, it's been several years since I've cleaned my cello. but anyway, they look cool.
Exactly.
And I love that because it's just the way we've been on quite a journey together. I've had the same cello for 20 years.
So I wonder whether at the heart of every innovator, particularly in music, whether there's just a sentimental fool.
I love that. Pretty much. I mean, I think it was funny. Yeah, being a cellist is such a serious thing. And I'd end up in the studio and they were like, play a beautiful G. And I'm like, do you want anything else besides G? No, just hold G for a long time. Like, okay. But I was like, there's so much more that I want to do and say, you know, and feel.
Recently, I saw you at a tribute to Leonard Cohen, the quintessential poet/musician who had all of that gravitas that Jacques Brel had and Lord knows how many other great chanteurs. It was packed with people, and everyone who performed, you know, did a lovely job. But your performance, I have to say, which came sort of about halfway through, it transformed that event from just sort of an evening of heartfelt appreciations to performance art. You performed the song, I'm Your Man.
I did. To do that one. So I channeled a lot of punk rock energy, but also I feel like I ended up singing it like Billy Idol, kind of. You know, the men in my life, or who I really want to be, maybe, is Billy Idol.
Maybe so.
No, I just wanted to bring sort of this like rough energy to that song. I mean, it's funny.
Tell us about the song.
Well, Leonard Cohen, like many French men that were singing songs, the style of singing we've been talking about, are not afraid to say, you know, like Jacques Brel, he'll say, I'll be the shadow of your dog. Like, I'll be your dog. No, I'll be the shadow of your dog. I won't say anything. Just don't leave me. Like, they're not afraid to, like, be like...
Go there.
To go there. And yes. Leonard Cohen goes there. And you know, he's not afraid to put himself sort of like in the shadow of a woman, you know? And I think that's a French trait, I think. Also, to hear I'm Your Man come out of a woman's mouth is sort of a modern, you know, fun thing to do as well. But I love singing it.
If you want love, I'll do anything you ask me to. And if you want another kind of love, I'll examine every inch of you. And if you want to drive a car, it's
fall at your feet. I'd howl at your beauty like a dog in heat. I'd claw at your heart, I'd tear at your sheets, and I'd say
say, whenever I listen to that, I think, boy, Leonard Cohen should have heard Helen Gillet sing that.
Oh, that is super cool of you to say.
It's true.
Well, I might do some Leonard Cohen covers coming up here and release them somewhere. I'm not sure if I'll put them on an album or if they'll just be out there in the ether. So, but it'll probably surface again.
Do you feel as if you're at the top of your game?
I certainly hope not. I hope to be at the top of my game when I'm 80. But, you know, I do feel like I've arrived somewhere good, which is maybe the first time I've been able to say that. And I mean that in all of my life. And I mean, it's all related. I don't think there's any turning back for me. I've played all these different styles of music, and I hope to learn more and go in that direction. I guess that's what I meant by that.
One of your most recent recordings is a recording called Atchafalaya,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, I mean, you don't have to be an English major to, you know, an English literature major to kind of see how in many ways you have spun around the world, found your way here, and the song bespeaks a calm joy of being here in the state of Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Absolutely. I mean, this is my home. I remember when I rounded the 9-year mark. In New Orleans, I was like, this is it. I've now lived in New Orleans longer than anywhere on the planet. And now I'm, you know, way beyond that. So I'm here, you know, and it's a good feeling. It's a good fit for me. It's got the tropical climate of Singapore. It's got that French influence. It's in the States, you know, but I still am learning so many new things. Really, if I'm learning something new culturally, I feel like I'm at home.
Yeah. No, I understand that. But were you actually tubing on the Atchafalaya River?
Let's get back to that. Yes. No.
No,
because don't go. This is a warning. Don't try this at home. The Atchafalaya is not a good place to tube.
That's what I was going to wonder.
No.
Ask you about.
The Bogachita is where I was tubing.
Ah.
However, Bogachita as a word just wasn't fitting in with this, like, very soothing. And I thought, well, the Atchafalaya is close enough. Like, it's like the river basin. And so I combined those two things. I combined my experience in the Bogachita River, which is not too far. You know, I mean, if you're looking at the world.
Well, from the crow's view.
From the crow's view. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but obviously, if you're local, that's a world of difference. And don't do it. Don't go down the Atchafalaya.
Yeah. Well, may I ask you, would you be interested in playing that for us and taking us out?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
I'm going to do that, and I'll do a little outro that is my song Chagrin, which is influenced by a little French children's song, but I have taken it into a polyrhythmic sort of direction. So,
and is that chagrin in English?
Yes.
And would that be the chagrin of actually trying to tube down the Atchafalaya?
Let's say yes. Yeah, don't do it.
<All right. laughs>
I like that.
thank you so much for being with us. I've just enjoyed every minute of our conversation.
I'm just sad it's over. Me too. I've had a great time, Gwen. Thank you so much for having me on.
Helen Gillet.
All right.
You've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show was produced by Lynette Johnson, Steve Panacek, Justin Armstrong, Garrett Pittman, Jason Rhine, and Lars Hoel. Special thanks this week go to the Club Siberia. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. For more information about Helen Gillet and a playlist of the songs in this program, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. And don't forget to like us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, the Rosa Mary Foundation, the Pinkelope Foundation, which my wife, Diana Pinkley, and I established, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, Adam Newman Designs, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax-deductible, thanks to our partnership with the National Performance Network. For more information about how you can support our program, go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.